Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right then, it's the Luke and Pete Show. It's Thursday. I do hope you are keeping well. We are hurtling towards the end of July, Luke. I'm a little bit scared.
It's mad how quickly it all goes when you get older. I know it's an old cliche thing that old people say. If you're 18 years old and listen to this, you're thinking, I'll give it over, Grandad. But it does get really fast the older you get.
It does indeed. It does indeed. Did you read that this morning that the super rich, 83 millionaires, it would be weird to have an 8.3 amount of...
I'm a third of a millionaire.
83 millionaires have signed a letter asking for higher taxes on the super rich to pay for COVID-19 recoveries in the US. I mean, I think that is very much people getting in front of a story rather than a genuine need for them to jettison revenue and money and cash.
Well, some people would understand, if they're clever, that if they give away a load of money, it's going to make them probably... particularly if you're somebody who relies entirely on kind of PR for your wealth. And what I mean by that is you maybe sell some kind of product or you have some kind of business that rolls around goodwill from the public. It really, I mean, I'm going to be less cynical than you here, Pete. It really is a win-win, right? Because you give away a load of your money, which obviously gets hopefully used for the better, for the greater good. But it also sort of burnishes a reputation where more people are going to want to consume your shit. So I perfectly understand that. It makes sense to me.
No, I completely agree. Well done them, I guess.
So how much of your wealth are you giving away, Peter?
I mean, everything's tied up in a lot of Bitcoin.
No, you've got tied up in a business internet account, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. That's not good. I reckon I have spent over the last 4 years something like cracking in for like sort of 10 grand's worth of business internet. It's not even that fast. I went around a mate's house recently. The internet was insanely quick. I managed to download a video game in about 10 minutes. It was insane. Yeah. And I've got to put up with a 15 megabit line. We're not going to talk about technicals on this podcast. I'm fairly certain that a lot of you aren't that interested in that kind of caper. But I am. And I'd like to apologise for submitting it to the show all the time.
Pete, the other thing it's worth mentioning when it comes to... I mean, I haven't seen this letter. I don't know who these people are. But it is worth at least acknowledging that if you take someone like Bill Gates and his foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation,
the George Soros co-funded plan to make us all patsies, the Chinese disease, etc.
What's a patsy?
A patsy. What's a patsy? Like a putz, like a like
I
a
thought
mark.
It was a burger before it was cooked.
A patty.
But anyway, regardless of all that, that foundation's given away $47 billion.
Yeah, it's the kind of incredible. Like amount of money that you can't say that you can't. That's what I don't understand. Like, obviously, he's been very vocal on the need for vaccinations and discovering a COVID-19 vaccine. And he has, for the last 10 years, been going on about the greatest single threat behind climate change to the human race is viruses and disease and things like that. So it's not like it's out of character, but to characterize his good nature and his charitable works as being somehow a plot to take over the world, he's putting so much money into this, it's impossible to think of it as anything other than completely benevolent. I can't. It's such a ridiculous amount of money. I don't care how much PR he thinks he's going to get out of it or how much his foundation is going to get out of it. It is an obscene amount of money. And this is the sort of money that probably other people, who, you know, Jeff Bezos, for example, makes in about a day, fair play, but it's still a ridiculous amount of cash.
There have been some. I don't know enough about the issue, and we haven't planned this, so I can't go time to go and research it. But
have a stab.
Like, there's just a couple of bits of it are problematic, probably, and he's attracted criticism for investing in some controversial stuff. I expect partly because $47 billion is a lot of money to keep track of. I imagine, and it probably permeates everywhere. I expect that's the reason. Probably
have a stab is the pro-vaccine.
Have a stab.
Have a stab. Have a stab. Have a stab.
So, would you? How much have you made $1 billion? How much of it would you give away, Pete?
I mean, I just through bad investment, I'd lose so much of it. So, you may as well, you know, if you know me and you've got any foolhardy, stupid ideas, I mean, you know, get your you know, plan for a massive investment of money. If I was a billionaire, because I. Suffer fools gladly.
suffer fools willingly and encouragingly. Right. But you know the old Jeff Bezos thing, there's a little known fact about old Bezos that he didn't he get a $400,000 loan from his parents to save Amazon at one point? And he was operating out of his garage or something, and then obviously that helped him on his way. So he's had a little bit of help. He's turned that into a lot of money.
Just a little bit. Like how much, if you went to your mum and dad right now, how much money could you get out of them in a day? Oh, like how much cash?
Probably none.
Well, I reckon they've probably got $5,000. I reckon they've probably got $5,000 somewhere.
Jeff Bezos has got $189 billion, which is absolutely incredible. It's just it doesn't even make any sense.
I was sort of admitting, and that he was sort of saying that, like, his friend is he's waiting for his parents to sadly pass on, and when they do, he will inherit a ridiculous amount of money and a pretty decent country pile. Just a friend who's kind of waiting for he's expecting a bit of a windfall once his parents sadly depart this plane. A ridiculous size house in the middle of nowhere, near London though, is clearly worth a lot more than houses up north, but. And my mum and dad's house is like $100,000, and in this world, that's not even a deposit for a house near London, is it?
$100,000, you get a deposit for that, yeah, but it's not going to get you a house, is it? No,
no. But I sort of go, I don't know why anybody should be expecting any money from their parents. They've done their bit.
I agree.
Let them sell a house. Do what you want. The problem is with my mum and dad is they don't do anything, so I don't know what they'd possibly be able to do with £100,000.
How's Stuart doing?
He's all right. Yeah, he's made some. I think he may have made some medical masks. The family WhatsApp is abuzz with noise because my sister's just had a new baby, so my dad's kind of photoshops and daddy WhatsApps forwarding. It kind of fall by the wayside next to cute pictures of the two Bens hanging out with each other. But like, yeah, my dad, I think he made...
Is that how we stopped dad's app groups, Pete? Is that how we stopped the really insidious dad's app groups? Just endless grandchildren.
Yes, and we just got to get fucking. That's what we got to just get fucking. And so that the dad's app just feel like family WhatsApp groups aren't the place to put their naughty little, frequently a bit sexy WhatsApp pictures. I think he may have made some masks out of his pants. I think that was that's the funniest thing I can think of. I think he made it out of some old boxer shorts.
Old pants.
Some medical masks. Some old pants. I'm fairly certain. I'm 99% certain that as a bit of a joke, my dad made some medical masks out of his own pants. So got a level. That's kind of what's happening in this.
Can't he use like a less potentially contaminated item of clothing, like a shirt or something?
Yeah, yes, he could. Is the answer? Is the short answer? Yes, he could. But I think, in the same way, he's got a bone hanging around his neck that was taken out of his foot. I think he likes the danger. I think he likes the problems.
Fair enough. When I went back to see my parents my dad was fiddling with the circuit board from an electric toilet from a caravan.
Nice. Lovely old job.
Yeah, my dad loves looking at circuit boards. It's like his thing.
Nice.
I'll tell you that he also rusted down a massive anvil as well.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know. Well, it sort of like dremeled it until it was beautiful and shiny.
Just cleaned it up, yeah.
Lovely old job.
Peter, have you heard the, frankly, troubling news that we are very close to losing the European hamster? It's now been added to the critically endangered list.
How'd that happen? How did that happen? We've got so many hamsters in our houses.
No, it's a little bit of a misconception, chiefly because if you think of a common or garden pet hamster, that's generally a Syrian hamster or a dwarf hamster. The European hamsters are much bigger. But they could sadly go to the wall, so to speak, get extinct in the next 30 years due to deforestation. Although it's sort of partly some parts of the world, I think they're quite voraciously hunted as well. And also on that type, something a bit closer to home for you, 33 species of lemur have now been added to the critically endangered list, which now means that 103 of the 107 different types of lemur in the world are now threatened with extinction.
How do you start? Like, where do you start? Like, if you've got that many kinds of lemurs on your list, who do you start with? Like, which ones do you prioritize? Because presumably they're all in the same like classification.
Lemurs are the ones that you only find in Madagascar, right?
Yeah,
they've evolved. Independently of anything else, are endemic to Madagascar, right? I think so. I mean, I guess that you could probably try and conserve them there. But the other thing is they've just finished, scientists, biologists, or whoever they are. Yeah, I guess in this case, marine biologists just finished a massive study on the North Atlantic whale, which started in 2018, I think. And apparently, they could only find 250 of them. So that they're about to pop their claws as well. And finally, for now, Peter, if you want to ask a real question about the European hamster, is surprise, surprise, they're used in Chinese medicine to treat kidney and lung diseases.
So, of course, yes.
I mean, which is mad. So sadly, the news from the natural world, I know you're not that bothered about the natural world unless it involves chimps. It's not good news.
Not ideal, you would say, yeah. Lemur, I mean, again, is the ring-tailed lemur in there? I imagine not, because you see a lot of them. If you sort of think of lemur, you just think of like a black and white Everton mint, don't you?
They always use the ring-tailed lemur as the photo accompanying the story.
Yeah.
Because it looks the best. And I think it might be one of the biggest as well. But they're listed as endangered, not critically endangered. But maybe that'll be updated. But it's kind of weird to think of because... Interestingly enough, I know there'll be a lot of lemurs in captivity around the world and stuff, but for 107 different types of an animal to only be present on one island, which relatively speaking, compared to the rest of the world, isn't that big. I know Madagascar is quite big, but it's not that big. It's incredibly dangerous if anything could happen to that island or anything, you know, whether it be politically or naturally would happen to that island. Then they're in big trouble. Who's going to save the lemurs?
Who's going to save the lemurs? You would argue that, I mean, if you're going to look at the animal kingdom as a whole, they've had their time. They've grown weird snouts because they've had no natural predators. They don't look like any other primates. So that's why they look so strange. So they've had their time. Humans have come along, fucked it all up. Get rid of it. Listen, get rid of them. weird goths. Weird primate goths.
And the pandas, they're the most gothic. Pete, we always talk about the animal kingdom, right? Who for you, if someone said to you, it's an animal kingdom, you have to bestow the status of king and queen on the animal kingdom using a certain species, what species would you pick?
Well, I'm getting the sort of age where I sort of respect my elders and I never thought I'd get there. So I would probably go for the oldest looking animal. It'd probably be like a tortoise or an old lizard.
A giant tortoise.
Yeah, a gecko. Look, if you cut, there's
a lot of animals. Can't get anything done.
Okay. What if you, yeah, if you can't respect an animal that can sort of magnetically stick to what appears to be a sheer surface on a on an atomic level, I think you've gone a little wayward, I think, my son.
Yeah, I think if you people who cite the old tortoise because they live so long. Isn't it the Greenland shark that lives like they definitely? They're scientists have been able to like confirmed using radiocarbon testing a Greenland shark that was at least 272 years old.
Lobsters? Oh, squid. Squid are technically immortal, aren't they? But I don't really understand all that.
There's a couple of animals that can endlessly replicate. I think, yeah. But I would probably give it to the humble elephant, Pete.
Yeah. They've been hunted for long enough, and they've got
symbolically resonate a lot, don't they?
They do. They've got lovely little trunks, and their ears are the same shape as continents, inexplicably. Yeah,
good name recognition. Everyone knows what an elephant is. The last thing
very
you
easy
want,
to draw.
Yeah, exactly that. So kids can get involved. The last thing you want when you're bestowing the title of king or queen on an animal kingdom is large parts of the world to not know what it is. Are you not going to have that for an elephant?
Well, once they kick the mammoths to the curb, you know they've got free rein now, haven't they?
It'd be good if mammoths made a comeback. Actually, there's a lot of talk.
They've been away for too long, and I for one would like to see another album from the mammoths.
The most overly hyped thing in the world possibly is the talk of reintroducing the woolly mammoth. Never happens. Always talked about. Never happens. Not seen a single one.
No, exactly. Boring. Bore off. But then you sort of think, oh, maybe they just all went back to the sea because we've only mapped like 20% of the ocean. So like, let's have a bit
you
of that.
They probably
just went back in. I had a go.
Off the coast of Hartlepool.
Yeah.
Part of looked at
a wind farm. I've named all wind farms near my house.
Exactly. Well, where do you stand on wind farms? Where do the people of Hartlepool stand on wind farms?
I don't know. We haven't got many, but we should have, I guess, because it's very windy up there, very chilly.
They look fucking cool.
I think they look fucking cool. I think they're. Have you ever seen the ones in like in America where you sort of like drive through a state and out in the sticks, you'll just have this hill where they'll just be like, it's like they've kind of sprouted up. They're like trees that have sort of sprouted up. They look so cool. And sometimes the sheer force of the wind strips the legs off them. Sometimes they fall over. Lovely old job. Exciting.
That's, if anything, embarrassing for them. They're specifically put there to deal with the wind.
Oh, too much wind. Yeah. Too much.
It's like working at McDonald's and going, oh, it's just too many burgers. That's what you signed up for. What
Count
you
me
signed
out.
Up for. If a wind turbine is falling over due to wind, that is, I'm afraid, quite poor.
Pistic.
On that note, Peter, let's have a little break. And when we come back, we'll do some emails. I've got a brilliant one here about an old lady being buried.
Oh.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and Japan-based YouTuber Chris Broad every Wednesday as we offer the lowdown on what's happening in one of the most unique and exciting countries in the world. The Abroad in Japan podcast is home to all things Japan, from things to do...
So today we've come to you guys with 12 places in Japan that nobody knows about.
To the bizarre...
When I moved into my new apartment last year, the police guy came to my door, knocked on my door, I opened it, it was a policeman, and he said to me, in English, I am Japanese policeman. And that's the best introduction you could possibly do as a Japanese policeman.
To the downright filthy.
And for those of you that don't know what a tenga is, Pete and I did discuss how to describe it best before doing the podcast, and I'll let Pete describe what a tenga is. What is it, Pete?
It's a solo male silicon-based onanist's aid, so to speak.
Brilliant.
New episodes every single Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Abroad in Japan is a Stakhanov production.
And we're back. It's the Luke and Pete Show, part two of your working week. I do hope you're having a cracking Thursday, or whenever you manage to catch up to us. I'm Pete Donaldson. I'm joined by Luke Moore. Luke, you promised me a harrowing story about an old lady.
Yeah, I've got one here. And before I get into it, though, I want to tell people in no uncertain terms that just because their work situation might have changed, i.e. they're not commuting as much, that's no excuse not to listen to this show. Find the time, okay?
Yes.
We find the time. You should also find the time. It's not acceptable. Don't want your excuses.
Stop telling off our listeners.
Sorry. Here we go. This is from Kieran, who says, evening, gents. Listen to this week's, which I guess was last week's, fairly grim discussion on graves and the prevalence of cremations, and I thought I'd be able to add a few topics to the discussion. Okay, number one, grave burials are very much still a done thing in Ireland, and the Irish wake is very much still part of the Roman Catholic process. If you're not familiar with that, essentially it means in the 3 days before the funeral, the coffin sits in the person's house, open, and everyone in the community essentially goes in, says their goodbyes, and has tea and sandwiches. It's exactly as mental as it sounds. Number two, next, as a random cross-section of the two topics preserving life and grave robbers, I'd like to draw the story of Marjorie McCall of Lurgan, Northern Ireland, to your attention, who was buried twice but only died once. In 1695, Marjorie caught a fever and believed to be dead, her family held a wake and promptly buried her. Soon after she was laid to rest, grave robbers, who regularly ransacked newly buried coffins back then, dug her up and attempted to steal a valuable ring she was still wearing. Unable to remove the ring from her finger, the robbers decided to cut the finger off. But as soon as they began their gruesome task, the lady awoke, and as the story goes, she scared the devil out of the grave robbers, who then skedaddled. Keep up the good work, Kieran.
I mean, is this like a situation where I remember when I was at Cub Scouts and quite apart from the horrors I experienced elsewhere in that particular organisation, I remember a ghost story situation kind of happening around a campfire and somebody doing an amazing rendition of a "Who's got my middle finger? Who's got my middle finger?" You know, grave robbers have stolen the middle finger of a woman and she was out for revenge. And oh man, that takes me back. That kind of story.
It's quite frightening, really.
It's a little bit. It's a bit spooky.
And I mean, the most frightening thing that happened to you at the Cubs, we can't get into, can we?
I think we talked about it before. I was touched up by a vicar.
It's not going to it again. But the thing is,
not below the trousers. Not below the belt.
No.
Above.
That's the motto of the show. Nothing below the trousers.
We
have to understand, though, Pete, with the story that Kieran has kindly shared with us. It happened in 1695. What's the veracity of it?
What's the veracity? It was in the National Enquirer. Ye olde National Enquirer. Bullshit. It was in the Daily Sport.
Yeah, Kieran did include a BBC link. I haven't clicked on it. So I don't know if it's true or not. But it does make you think.
The 1600s.
I mean, how do you know what's happened? What's the statute of limitations here? Because I'm telling you now, if it happened before, basically with the age of the internet and everything being so confusing these days with deep fakes and all the rest of it, if it happened before last Tuesday, I don't even know if it actually happened.
There's a did you say that somebody found a mummy that had been murdered? Not a mummy, just a body that had been murdered doing the HS2 thing. Or maybe they've murdered a body to bits. There's a skeleton that had been, I think, hit in the back of the head or something. But yeah, everyone was doing some kind of like, because everyone's obsessed with like true crime at the moment. We're kind of doing our own kind of like literal and figurative digging about bodies that they're finding in as they go through. But yeah, if you are a person who's sort of digging the seam, so to speak, for this engineering marvel that is HS2, are you not sort of thinking we're obviously barreling through a load of Crossrail? Not HS2. They haven't started that yet, have they? Crossrail, and they got this body. But like, are you not sort of thinking I might find like some Roman coins? I might find some like buried treasure. Is there a statue? Are you legally allowed to keep what you find, or does it have to go to the Queen or something?
I think the general rule. This might be a myth actually, but I've read before that if you find something in a field or whatever, you have to dig it up, i.e. it's not just lying there. First of all, you need permission from the landowner, which I guess in this case would be covered. And secondly, I think it's split evenly between the landowner and the person that discovered it.
I think that might be the case.
Interestingly enough, on the Crossrail thing, there was an article a while back about the things that had been found so far during those excavations. There was a massive plague pit found, wasn't there?
There was also
a pair of medieval ice skates fashioned from animal bones.
Right? What? I didn't see that one.
Yeah, and a Tudor bowling ball. And the reason I know this is because there was an exhibition. They found so much stuff that they actually did like an impromptu museum exhibition about it.
Lovely old job.
A medieval bowling ball.
Well, imagine fashioning some ice skates out of a little monkey's head. Like in Indiana Jones, very enjoyable.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cracking stuff.
Any of our listeners have ever dug something interesting up.
Yeah, we've done like gardens, but like I guess people have jobs where they may do some digging. They may be miners, or they may be maybe this or that. But I guess if you're working for a mining company, or you're working for your Crossrails, you're working for London Transport there, so you're on the clock. So whatever you find goes to old LT, doesn't it?
I'd be shoving it straight in my pocket.
I'd be definitely doing that. I wouldn't be telling anyone.
The problem comes to when you want to sell it or whatever, because you know there was a guy on the Antiques Roadshow actually on Sunday who had this glass
Buzz Lightyear.
The Buzz Lightyear in the package. $7.95 it was, right?
$7.95.
There's a guy who he was a Middle Eastern guy, and it really made me sit up and take notice, because of course on the Luke and Pete show recently we've been talking about the prevalence of glass and glass making, you know, in the early ages and stuff, and he had this glass vessel, this guy, that he had got from Syria. Now, apparently, I didn't know this, and this actually plays into the chat we were having about Far East and whether they had glass and what it was like in Europe. Well, apparently, the world center of glassmaking in ancient times was in Syria, in Damascus.
Right.
That was the place, right? That was the place for it. I haven't researched further into that. I don't know why, but apparently that was the place. And this guy had this glass vessel that he had bought for £800 when he was in that part of the world. And it was purporting to be, I think it was purporting to be from the 11th century. So the way the guy dated it is the expert was saying, look, if what you're saying is true, this is the oldest piece of glass I've ever handled, and it's from around the same sort of time as the Norman Conquest in the UK, obviously 1066, right? And he said, how much you pay for it? And the guy said, I paid £800 for it. And he said, okay, let's have a look at it. And it turned out that it was fake, that it had been aged artificially.
Oh, no.
It had been used in a certain technique that wasn't around at that time, so it couldn't have been real. But it was quite funny because the antique expert was so encouraged and so excited that this guy had kind of tried to put his money where his mouth is and buy this amazing piece of glass. He said, do you know what? I'm going to value this at £800. He was like, all right, thank you. No worries. No problem. You can come back if I'm wrong, and I'll buy it up for £800. How about that? And he was like, all right, yeah, thanks. It was a very nice moment. So he thought...
Oh, I like that a lot.
Because, Pete, the other thing was, I think he was saying that if... there are examples of in quite good condition because they've been buried for whatever reason. They've been discovered pieces of glass from Damascus in that time, thousands of years ago, in this case, that have sold for, I think, like seven figures plus, like millions of pounds.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Can you imagine? But can you imagine a modern archaeologist and a modern historian kind of looking at how, you know, these kind of trinkets and bits and bobs have survived so much and such upheaval and looking at how places like Syria, Iran are being treated and are treating their own people and treating, you know, how they are perceived in the world. And so therefore archaeologists can't come in and enjoy the rich historical history of the place. And they must... They've seen generations of rulers coming in and going out, and these places being one of the most important parts of the world, of the sort of proto-modern world. You've got to be pretty fucking angry about how modern politics is preventing you from going into countries and learning more about your favorite subject. Well, imagine if you're like a Middle East kind of expert on that, you know, on pottery or glass or something like that, and you literally can't access these countries because of tedious fucking tribal and international politics.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. I think, you know, there's a lot of hand wringing, a lot of soul searching around somewhere like the British Museum, as we talked about before. When you go there, it's actually quite apologetic now. All the signs are kind of a bit like, oh, this was taken by so-and-so at this point from this place, and now we're in discussions with the government of this country to talk about returning it. And it's like all that kind of stuff. But the other thing that's worth bearing in mind is that I'm only talking pertaining to this country now because that's what I've read. I don't know about other countries. But in this country, the preservation of old stuff, whether it be a building or an artifact or whatever, is actually quite a modern phenomenon. Like, I think it only really started in like Victorian times. The amount of things that have just been burnt to the ground, not considered, particularly in the places like times like the Dark Ages, it's just unbelievable. The amount of stuff that would have been lost over the years is absolutely like staggering. Like, you think of something as well, like back in the day, something like the Bonfire of the Vanities, where a load of stuff was essentially burnt because it was, you know, it was seen to be sacrilegious or whatever. And I might have got this wrong, but I'm fairly certain that like hundreds of what would now be priceless paintings were just burnt because they were seen as fake idols and stuff, and they've been lost forever, you know?
I like it. I like starting again. Control alt delete. Let's start again. I'm not saving it. Save as, fuck off. let's make some new stuff.
Apparently, yeah, cosmetics, art, books and stuff in Florence were burnt in the late 15th century as part of a festival, as a dedication to one thing or another. Yeah, just because I guess they were seen as sinful, so mad.
I mean, the amount of lead paint they used to use back then, I would not want to inhale that.
Can
burning
we burn
a big pile.
Can we burn some old episodes of this show, perhaps?
Can we burn podcasts? Exactly.
Yeah,
imagine,
exactly.
Yeah, imagine that. Anyway, if you want to get to the show, hello at Luke and Pete Show is the way to do it. Where can we be found on Twitter, Luke?
It's at Luke and Pete Show. I occasionally share pictures that people have sent me of different weird brands of batteries. I reply to interesting stuff on there. Pete doesn't even know the password, so you won't get anything from him on there.
Nope.
But you might get in touch with me if you get in touch on Twitter at Luke and Pete Show. Yeah.
Lovely old job. Well, I'm going to ship off and edit this podcast and probably put it up if you're really, really nice to me, Luke.
Yeah, well, it would be a bit of a waste of time otherwise, wouldn't it? Take all the boring stuff out, yeah.
It's a 2-minute show.
Nice.
We'll be back on
I'll see you on Monday for another 2-minute one.
Have a cracker weekend, everyone.
Bye bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.